You're listening to the Sporting Witness podcast from the BBC World Service with me, Lucy Williamson. It's 60 years since English footballers changed the history of their sport by campaigning successfully for the end of caps on their wages. In 2011, I spoke to the late Jimmy Armfield.
Through to Bobby Smith, and by Jove, Bobby Smith got on to an ordinary pass in midfield.
It's 1961, and England's top footballers are on the brink of revolt.
The biggest problem that the players had was not just the salary, it was the registration form.
Jimmy Armfield was one of them, a defender for Blackpool Football Club and later captain of the England squad.
Manchester United came to buy me when I was a young player, and then Arsenal, and then Tottenham, and the club wouldn't let me go, and they simply could hold your registration, and there was nothing you could do about it.
You mean that if you couldn't choose to go, even
no.
if someone was trying to buy you?
Correct. There used to be an old joke about them being soccer slaves. When Manchester United came to buy me, I went to see the manager. I said, no, out you go, you're not going. And that was the end of the conversation.
England take the free kick, it's put back to right back Armfield, who dribbles inside, holds it, cuts out onto the wing. He's just held that ball.
Whoever you worked for as a player in those days, caps on footballers' wages meant you could only ever earn £20 a week, about $30. More than the average wage in Britain at the time, but not much more.
The cap was 16, then it was 18, and then it went to 20. But whether you were the great Stanley Matthews or whether you were an 18-year-old Jimmy Armfield just coming into the team at Blackpool, that was the most you could earn and that was it.
Stanley Matthews, perhaps one of the game's greatest players, was bought by the club back in those days for the princely sum of, well, I'll let Blackpool's manager tell you.
We argued for 2 hours, I should think, and I thought it was 10,000. Anyway,
this you were bidding for Stanley, I presume?
That's right. We were bidding 10, they wanted 12, I think it was, and then, of course, we went to 11. I said, look here, Bob, I said, we've been talking here now about 2 hours. I says, what about us splitting it?
Oh, you agreed on 11 and a half, though.
That's right.
Do you think that bought you a good buy?
A good buy? Well, I should say we pinched him, but didn't buy him.
£11,000. Nowadays, that wouldn't pay for even a week of Premiership talent. Wages for players had been creeping up over the years, but average wages had risen much faster. And in 1961, one man led the Football Union to change the way footballers were paid forever.
The union were just starting to pick up a little bit of momentum, led by Jimmy Hill, who was a manager and director of Coventry City, and he was the man really who sparked it, in my opinion.
The PFA has gained for professional players in this country two freedoms that, for a long while, every other working man's valued. First of them is to earn as much as he possibly can from his chosen profession, and secondly, to be able to choose his employer. And if a player decides he can no longer stay with the club for one reason or another, then the facilities are there for him to get away.
What was going on in the changing rooms, you know, around this time, as you say, when the union started to take this issue up? What were people saying? What was the atmosphere?
Well, there's a few people who were very apprehensive because the situation had been, the status quo had been, for so long. And footballers were very much working class people.
What did you do when the union started talking about this? What was your take on it?
Well, I thought we deserved more than we were getting, certainly. And because when they started in the 1961 period, I was in the England team then. I'd been in the England team, about 2 or 3 years? And we were coming towards the next World Cup in 1962. And
how much were you earning at the time, if you don't mind my asking?
Well, before the World Cup, we beat the maximum wage. I was on £20 a week. £18 a week after tax.
£18 a week after tax. And what could that buy you? What sort of a lifestyle could that buy you in those days?
Well, certainly it's not the lifestyle that the present-day footballer has by a mile. By a mile. We used to go to the bank every Friday because our wages were paid directly into the bank after tax. And we all used to parade down there and take it, stand in a queue and get our wages. We didn't have many who had cars at the club. Foreign holidays were just about coming into play, but people didn't venture much farther than, say, Spain. It was totally different. It was a different way of life altogether.
But by January 1961, the mood in the changing rooms was troubled enough for the union to float the idea of a strike.
When it came to the crunch, with the union. I remember us going to Manchester to a meeting there, and the lad stood up and said, you know, my father works down the mine, and he has £8 a week, and I get £14 or £15 a week. So, you know, I just feel, you know, we've no justification for causing any problems.
Not everyone was pushing to have more pay.
No, they weren't all, because, well, that's what Labour was like in those days. The Labour force, you know, it was the bosses who ruled things. It was as simple as that. And the clubs had dominated the scene for so long that they were the grand masters. And you remember, there were, you know, in our club, for example, at Blackpool, there were 40 professional players. So there was this large hinterland of football, young players wanting to be footballers because they looked on it as being a good life in some areas, better than, say, as I mentioned earlier, than going down the pit.
It sounds like people thought about footballers' salaries quite differently in those days.
Totally. Here's your wage, take it or leave it. That was it. You couldn't go anywhere. There's nowhere to go. You know, there'd no agent to look after you or anything like that. There was nothing at all.
The threat of a strike split attitudes among the players. Nevertheless, says Jimmy Armfield, it had enough backing to scare the Football Association.
We all went to the meeting where we had the final say, and all our players all went to it. And, you know, but we never actually had a vote. All we had a vote on was, do we all agree that the union should fight this? And they did, and we won. And the simple truth was, that really was the turning point of football as we know it today.
Would you have gone on strike?
All the players would have gone on strike. There was no doubt.
Do you think that it will mean the end for some players? Do you think they would have to work harder?
Well, it isn't a matter of the amount of time you give. You don't do a time and motion study with footballers. What I do hope is that the new deal will restore incentive to improve their skills and really master their craft. And from this, I think everybody is going to gain. I mean, I'm hoping that, I don't know how many years' time it's going to be now, but Daddy will say it's the right thing to do, to become a professional player, and it won't be quite proper to go down to Twickers and watch the rugby. this will take time, but I think it's very important to the game itself that this type of person is attracted into football, because modern standards of play are demanding more intelligence.
It was a turning point. Caps on footballers' salaries were abolished overnight, and Jimmy Armfield, the young Blackpool defender, suddenly felt like a very rich man. Well, for a bit, anyway.
They doubled my wages to £40 a week, and I thought I was a millionaire till I went to play for England and Johnny Haynes was getting £100 a week, and I suddenly felt undervalued again. You know, I came home with the tail between my legs again, yeah. Yeah, I mean, say people who, you know, who today still know the great Stanley Matthews, first European Footballer of the Year, first Footballer of the Year, first footballer to be knighted. You know, played till he was into his late 40s, whatever it was, and was never cautioned, you know. So the simple truth is, you know, you think of players like that today, what would his value be? Stanley Matthews could put 10,000 on a gate. We used to have... Blackpool, we had the best away gates, not home gates, best away gates for six seasons running. And it was all down to people coming to watch Matthews. So if he's worth an extra 10,000 spectators every week, what's his value?
Who knows? But if England's current top footballers are anything to go by, it would be tens of millions of dollars a year. Jimmy Armfield died in 2018. He spoke to me, Lucy Williamson, in 2011. Thank you for listening. But before I go, here's a trail.